This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. The La Crosse Promise launched back in 2012 with a multifaceted mission. Organizers wanted to help local students transition from high school to higher education more easily and make sure students and their families can afford it. At the same time, the group is trying to improve the La Crosse area economically and give families incentives to establish roots in the community. Here today to talk about the La Crosse Promise is Jerilyn Dinsmore. She's the La Crosse Promise Executive Director. Brian Fukuda is a La Crosse County Community Development Specialist and an advisor to the La Crosse Promise Board. And Haley Moe is a Future Center Advisor, and we'll learn more about what Future Centers are in just a minute. So Jerilyn, I'm wondering, it seems like the La Crosse Promise, there's almost two parts to it. We have the Future Centers, and then we have the neighborhood-based scholarship program, which we'll talk about later. But what is this? Like, you know, I think people kind of get weighed down by, it seems complicated, but it's not.
Yeah, it's one of these organizations that it's hard to boil it down to your 30-second elevator speech. But it has a really a simple mission overall, and that's linking education with economic development, that the more education that citizens of our area have, the better off the community is going to be. And that's for a couple of different reasons. One is that when this current freshman high school class graduates from high school, 66% of the jobs out there are going to require some type of a 2 or 4 year certification. The other piece of it is that studies have shown that when a community has a good mixture of people of different education levels and income levels, it really is what's healthiest for a community. The more education that an adult has, the more likely they are to vote. They're likely to be healthier. They tend to have more stable families. They tend to be more active and civic-minded. So it's very good for a variety of reasons to try to instill the value of education in the area.
And Brian, you really helped spearhead this a few years back, at least just got people in this area starting to think about the La Crosse Promise and the potential it could bring. Why was it that you brought this to the area?
We started to learn about what this type of program was doing in other communities across the country.
The Kalamazoo Promise, I think, is like
right,
the...
starting with the Kalamazoo Promise. And really, this idea of linking education with economic development was just a really intriguing opportunity, and we just thought, why not here? And I think it was just about we have such a strong base in education already, and we have some economic development needs. We have some neighborhood development needs, and so it seemed like a good fit for our community to start talking about this type of a program. These communities across the country, in Kalamazoo and El Dorado, Arkansas, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and all of these communities that have looked at this have really started to see some really, really exciting changes to their communities based upon this principle.
So one of the things that you did a few years back was you had looked at just sort of the economics and the tax base in La Crosse and had found just some different disparities and reasons why, you know, our tax rates are higher than some other communities. And that sort of played a role in getting this going, right?
Right. We started this with really a challenging trends report that we had put together working between the county planning and economic development staff and the city planning and economic development staff at the city of La Crosse, and looked at the trends of concentrations of poverty and infrastructure needs and infrastructure investments, looking at school district referendums and looking at crime statistics and looking at all of these sorts of things that were really starting to challenge our community. And we weren't really at a point, we had some folks from Kalamazoo come here and they're like, do you guys really have problems like we have? And, you know, we didn't, but we also wanted to be proactive because we could see the trends leading us in that direction. And we didn't want to get to the point that, you know, some of these other communities have realized, because it's always harder to pick yourself up when you're lower. So we thought, let's head off these trends and start to reverse these trends now. So that's what the Promise started to do.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about the La Crosse Promise. My guests are Brian Fukuda. He's a La Crosse County Community Development Specialist. Jerilyn Dinsmore is a La Crosse County Promise, or the La Crosse Promise Executive Director. And Haley Moe is a Future Center Advisor. So let's start breaking down what the La Crosse Promise is. The Future Centers are sort of the most visible outcome of the La Crosse Promise. And essentially,
Haley, you're working with students on and families on a regular basis to almost prepare them for post-secondary education.
Yeah, some of the things that we do on a day-to-day basis are just putting together job shadows for students that are interested in a variety of things, vets, music teachers, any kind of teacher really, pharmacy techs, really anything that a student is interested in. We try to get them out into the field to talk to a professional and see what did it take, what type of education do they need to get to that career, what are some of the pros and cons, is it a sustainable career? Can they make money and pay their bills at the same time? Some of the other things that we do on a day-to-day basis are just helping kids with their college applications, filling out scholarships, finding scholarships, going on into the elementary schools to talk to the fifth grade students about the incomes that they can make depending on the type of education that they have. And then the big things that we do throughout the year are putting on workshops on like budgeting, essay writing, which is a good one for students who typically don't know where to start with their essays, preparing for the application, just what is the process starting in your junior year, what does the application process look like, what do schools look for, and then on non-school days, we take students on campus tours, so we've been to a lot of the different UW schools, and students are really excited about that.
And that's probably really helpful to families, especially being able to organize those tours, you know, if a family isn't able to take a couple days off of work and go visit a campus.
Yeah, and when we do our campus tours, it's not just like you normally, if you go with your family, you'll go get a tour and that's about it.
Sure.
We usually have like an admissions presentation. We'll take the tour. We'll eat lunch on campus. We try to bring in like alumni to do an alumni panel or just have a student panel. So students are kind of getting the real questions answered.
And you're based at La Crosse Central High School, correct?
Yes.
And Geraldine, there's the future centers are at Central and
there's one at Logan. And then we also spend a few hours a week at both Onalaska Luther and at Aquinas. And that's just serving students that reside within the school district limits.
Okay. So at what age can you start working with students within the future centers?
Any age, really. I mean, I've gone and talked to the elementary school kids. Last year, I went to a number of the fifth grade classrooms, and then in a few weeks, I'll be going to speak to some eighth graders who I just got a call the other day from the counselor who said, these kids need some motivation. Can you come out and give us a little bit of motivation so that they're excited to go to high school and kind of see what they can prepare for?
One of the interesting things that Haley's discovered is that there are, we make scholarship lists available to our students, but there are actually scholarships out there that eighth grader can apply for.
Really?
For college.
No, yeah.
And they just hold it for you till you get there. So it's kind of fun for her to convey that as well.
Yeah. So, you know, you talked about working mostly with high school students and some eighth graders. What are you, when you meet with the elementary school students, what are you talking with them about? Are they even thinking about college yet?
Sometimes. I would say some of them are talking about like their older siblings or, you know, an aunt and an uncle that went to college, or maybe my mom and dad are in college right now, so they're finishing their degrees. But one of the things that I really talk to them, I give them this brochure. It's called the Justificator Brochure, and it starts at if you drop out of high school, it tells you how much money you might be able to make on your salary. And it's like $13,000. So I ask the kids, do you think $13,000 is a lot of money? And all of them say, no. And I think that's really surprising. As a fifth grader, I think when I was in fifth grade, I thought $13,000 was a lot of money. And a lot of them are like, well, no, you have to pay for bills and, you know, you're paying for a cell phone. So we talk about what is the cost of living like? And then it goes up through a professional degree. And what are the different types of jobs that students can or kids can have as careers? What type of debt it might take? What type of salary you might see? We talk about some of the myths of going to college, you know. Can people with maybe not the best grades get into college? Well, of course, yes, you can get into college. It takes colleges look at lots of different things, your extracurricular activities, the volunteer service that you do, that your skill set that you have. So we just talk about a lot of different things regarding getting into school, if that's what you want to do. How do you get to school? You have to pay to go to school, and a lot of kids are surprised about that. One kid had asked his teacher, are they going to pay me to go to school? And they're going, no. You have to pay to go to school, but this is how it's going to benefit you in the future.
What about when you get and working with the high school students? Are there things that surprise you about freshmen and maybe even, you know, once they get up to their senior level, things that you realize they need to be taught, they need to learn earlier on?
Yeah, I would definitely say when we talk to students about debt, it's really not on their radar as a freshman. even through junior, I would say it's not on students' radars. And then when they get their senior year financial aid letter, they're like, oh my gosh, how am I going to pay for school? And so that's something that we really try to push is there's scholarships out there for freshmen. You got to be looking for them. We put them on our list. You need to go out and apply for them. Come to us and we'll help you find them. And just how to wisely spend your money. You know, I say to kids, like, I know it's really hard when you get $20 to not just go buy the next big thing, but really just put it away or try to invest it or something, because if you want to go to school, it's really expensive these days.
Brian, you've been living in the La Crosse area for a while. I mean, did you feel like all this education that Haley and the other Future Center advisors are doing, was this sort of like a gap? Like, was there a hole that needed to be filled with the information that they're putting out there?
Yes, definitely. I think, you know, and we worked with the school district of La Crosse. We worked with existing guidance counselors in all of the schools when we were first kind of formulating this program and starting up the Promise. And what we found was that there is a gap with that, because current guidance counselors in our high schools are just overwhelmed with all of the other issues that go with, you know, high school students and trying to get them through disciplinary things and choosing their high school classes and trying to figure out their way just through high school, that they don't get to spend a lot of time talking about what happens after high school. And so that was definitely a gap that exists in a lot of our schools. And so the La Crosse Promise is certainly working to try to fill that gap and try to get that level of education and resource to our students as early as we possibly can to make sure that they're thinking about these things.
And Geraldine, did you want to add to that?
We've talked to other Promise organizations around the country, and it just has really affirmed that for a student to succeed, they need not only the money for college, but they also need the savvy, the technical support. And we've seen experiments where they've given a group of eighth grade students in the inner city a full ride to college, and they know that all the way through when they enter high school, they know college is paid for. They did this experiment to see, well, they'll do better in high school than those that didn't have the money because they have a ticket out. And they didn't. The study's showing that it didn't help because they didn't provide any of that support, especially when it's a first generation college student. And I'm not talking about low income people necessarily, but when a mother or neither the mother or father had any college classes at all, they don't necessarily understand the rigor involved and the planning and the we heard a story of a community where the first day of technical college after graduation, some of the high school students showed up at the high school wondering where the bus was that was going to take them to college. I mean, they had no idea that they were supposed to register and how all of that worked. And so I think while it's definitely the student, the guidance counselors at the schools do an excellent job in all of these areas, there are so many last-minute details that have to be handled in terms of, and Haley can share some of those, or really putting an effort this spring to look at that. But getting students to log into their college email account and see what, you know, summer registration's coming up. Did you register for it? Did you hand in your housing deposit? Did you choose a roommate? The other thing I just wanted to mention, mm-hmm. while I was thinking of it, we really believe that we don't believe that college is necessarily for every student. What we want to do is make sure everyone has some type of post-secondary plan. It might be a trade school certificate, might be going to Salon Professional Academy or something like that, but just so that they're getting extra training so they can build their future.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about the La Crosse Promise. My guests are Geraldine Dinsmore, she's the La Crosse Promise Executive Director, Haley Moe is a Future Center Advisor, and Brian Fukuda is the La Crosse County Community Development Specialist. So Haley, you said, I'm sure you were very busy this spring.
Yeah.
Prepping to get kids off to college, prepare for graduation, maybe even prepare for senior year, which is a whole other beast.
Yeah. So one of the things that we've been doing over the last few years is putting on a senior survey. And one major change that we made this year was putting out our senior survey earlier. Last year we did it in May, and it was just really hard to kind of scramble to touch base with those seniors to see if they really had everything done. This year we did it in April, and over the last 2 weeks I've been so busy talking to students about, have you accepted your financial aid? And a lot of kids are coming and going, what? What do you mean? I'm not sure what it looks like. So kids aren't even sure what their passwords are to get into accounts or how to get to their accounts. And so finally, when I figure that out and get them in to see their financial aid, I can explain the difference between the loan and the grant and what is how to fill the gap, because they're going to be offered $10,000, but school costs $15,000. So there's still that gap that they need to fulfill. Talking to students about loan counseling, because if they're offered a government loan, they have to complete loan counseling. And a lot of students, I'm just surprised, aren't reading through the materials that they're sent in the mail, or maybe they just don't have the know-how and their parents are doing it for them, or they just aren't looking at that materials, because a lot of the students that I've been seeing, it's just getting to do the financial aid stuff, making sure that they have their housing things in check, signing up for registration. A couple of students that I've talked to recently were signing up to go to UWL, and two of the registration dates had already closed. And they're like, oh, I haven't even started that kind of stuff. So they didn't even know how to get to it. So it's just really navigating through their school portals and their school accounts and making sure they check their school emails. Students that I'm surprised they're not checking their emails and have pages of emails to go through. So just sitting down with them really and deleting the emails that they don't need, and telling them what they do. I can't tell you the number of times I've had seniors say, what am I going to do without you next year? Can you just move to school with me? And I said, you guys can just call me or email me. I'm still available after you graduate. Just because you're gone doesn't mean I leave too. So yeah. Just call me next year and I'll help you.
So are you working with like the entire senior class, or are there just certain students that sign up to work with you?
It's any student that lives in the La Crosse School District. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And Gerilyn, I mean, even just the idea of her working with students as they graduate from high school, I mean, I'm sure they'll get on their feet once mm-hmm. they get there, but it is nice to have that sort of that safety net and mm-hmm. until they figure out, you know, what it's like being on your own, essentially.
And that is a real distinct difference between what we're able to offer to enhance what our wonderful school building guidance counselors are doing. Is they're finished with that student after graduation day, and we work with them through close to the end of June, the students, and then even call them over Christmas break, or we'll have an intern this fall that will start a new program where we try to touch base with a lot of current students to make sure that they're going to persist and follow through. There's a pretty high rate of students that end up dropping out after a year. Or what was the one person you talked to that was so concerned about a roommate or something over Christmas break?
And yeah, I had sent her an email. Just a bunch of students that I worked with last year over the summer, I sent an email just to say, hey, don't forget you have to do your FAFSA again. And one girl emailed me back and said, things are going so horrible with my room. And I said, well, I was a resident assistant in college. I know how to kind of solve those types of problems. And so I told her what to do. And I said, you still have another 7 months to live with this girl. Take care of it now. You don't have to live. Like I said, this is one of the best times of your life. Mm-hmm. You don't have to keep living like that. So I hope I ran into her at the store a couple months later. And I just said, I hope things got better. And she said, yeah. So, you know, it's about advocating for yourself, and a lot of students don't know how to advocate for yourselves, and it's scary to do, and asking questions is hard, but it's a skill that we all need to have.
And Brian, one of the hopes, from what I understand, as a result of the Future Centers, is that, you know, these La Crosse area high school students will go on, maybe they'll go to beauty school, maybe they'll go to college, maybe go to a tech school, but then either come back or stay in La Crosse and sort of build their professional roots and maybe start a family here in the area too?
Sure. Yeah. I think that's, you know, part of this is the building of our local economy and really trying to create a community that is education focused and a community that is producing good quality workforce for all of our businesses and companies that we're either trying to get to locate here or already locate here, helping to make them more successful so they can grow and add more jobs and build more tax base. And that's really, you know, part of what the county's involvement in this program is to try to help make that happen.
Sure. And the funding for the Future Centers, it's coming from La Crosse School District, but also private donations as well?
Currently, we're funded exclusively by private contributions.
Okay.
We were able to begin thanks to a very generous startup grant from the La Crosse Community Foundation, and they're continuing to support us for a few more years. In addition, funding from a lot of very generous family foundations in the area.
And then as it goes along, is that sort of the same funding model that you're hoping for, just kind of relying on donations or...
Yeah, we're exploring a lot of different possibilities. I think a lot of nonprofits depend on some type of an earned income revenue stream, and that's really difficult to do for our organization. We don't want to charge students for our services by any means. We have asked them to start kicking in $10 toward the campus visit field trip, but those actually cost us about $50 a student to put on, to charter a bus and go to Madison. So we are looking at different options for helping them become more sustainable over the long term.
How do you see the future centers growing in the future? Because there's, what, Haley, are there two or three of you?
There's two advisors.
Okay. Yep. Dealing with hundreds of students each semester.
Yeah.
Is there hope to ever like hire another advisor, or I mean, even expand into the private schools full time?
Well, we are looking into that option right now. Actually approaching some of our outlying school districts to see if they would benefit from this type of thing. There would be a fee attached to that. Mm-hmm. The initial funders were funding a program that was benefiting the school district of La Crosse, and there was this trend of families moving to the suburbs, and Brian actually helped create a really great video that's on our website that kind of explains why this is a countywide issue and why so many resources are being diverted. But at the same time, it's good for the entire region, for the outlying schools to also be prepared to enhance the workforce and be contributing members of society. It lowers, I think we believe it will lower overall the county human services budget the more we can work to kind of change that trend of when you have a well-paying job and you're able to contribute well to the community, you tend to be healthier. There's less of a demand on public services and so forth. So in the long term, I think it will be a money-saving endeavor.
Brian, did you want to add to that?
Sure. Yeah, this has been a tremendous community collaboration, and you know, we have partners from the school district that offers us the space without a charge for that, and you know, other resources that they might be able to offer within the schools to help us operate. I think you know, also we've had partnership from our local higher educational institutions, from UW-La Crosse, Viterbo, and Western, all partnering. They have representation on the board. They have they've been engaged in this. They understand the benefits to them. So continuing all of those community collaborations, as well as continuing to just pull in and educate other potential donors, because I think the greatest benefit would be is if we can continue to offer all of these services at no cost to the students and really get them the resources they need to you know, continue their education and continue to be a valuable part of the workforce.
Haley, I don't want you to play favorites, but do you have like a top success story that you want to share? Maybe a student that really sticks out in your mind?
Definitely. I have a student last year who was a senior. I had not met him until he walked into my office in about, I would say, probably January. He came in with a scholarship essay. He said, okay, I want to apply for this scholarship. It was for a full ride at Madison. And I read his essay. It had a lot of really great things in it, but I got done and I said, you didn't answer the questions. You have a lot of really good information here, but let's make it into a story. So for the next 3 weeks, we worked really hard on this essay, and 2 months later, he walked in and told me that he had gotten the full ride, which was so exciting. We were both so excited. He like couldn't contain his excitement. He had tears in his eyes, and I was so excited, and then we went to Madison this year, and he was on our panel of students that were alumni, and it was so nice to see him and see how they grow over their first year, and the advice that they can give to our current students, saying like, use your Future Center advisor, they're there to help you, and you know, we got a huge benefit out of it.
Is there any? Oh, Joe, go ahead, Geraldine.
When you mentioned the panel at Madison, Haley was nice enough to videotape the panel so I could watch it later. And it was fun to see. I think when we're able to take students on a campus visit, when their parents aren't around, I think they're asking questions that maybe wouldn't bring up if their parents were in the room. But some of the questions were, you know, can you really eat food at your desk in a lecture hall? And can you bring coffee to class? And I think a real poignant one was, do you have time to see your high school friends still? And it's like, and they all kind of looked at you like, well, your whole world is going to open up and you're going to make a lot of new friends, but you can make time for the old ones. And so just really neat for them to make that connection with someone just a year older. And
go ahead, Brian.
I'm going to say, when I first got involved with the Promise and started this discussion, the future centers were really kind of a secondary thing for me. This was about the economy. This was about, getting scholarships and getting, that aspect of the Promise going. And every month when we have our board meetings and we hear these stories of these students that Andrew and Haley come in and share it with us, it's really energizing because it's just so cool to see the amazing impact that these future centers and these tremendous advisors are having on the lives of students here in our community. And it's so cool. And if nothing else happens, this is a huge success because these future centers are making a difference for our students.
Before we take a break, Haley, do you have any final just thoughts or information you want to share on the future centers?
I just think everybody should come in and see us. We can help you.
Because families can.
Yeah, I have parents call me about how to look at your financial aid awards, or I have had moms call me that said, my freshman girl is really shy, but she wants to do a job shadow. So I can pull that student in and say, hey, I hear you're interested in being a vet. Let's get you out there. So, I mean, that's a particular girl that now she says good morning to me every morning. So it's like, oh, I started to cultivate a relationship with her, and she's a sophomore. So it's like, I'll get to see her now through her senior year, and that's really exciting to me.
Haley Moe is a Future Center advisor, Brian Fukuda is a La Crosse County Community Development Specialist, and Gerilyn Dinsmore is the La Crosse Promise Executive Director. Today, we're talking about the La Crosse Promise, and coming up next, our conversation on the program continues as organizers talk about the ambitious place-based scholarship program that they say could invigorate some La Crosse neighborhoods. Visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers to find a link to the La Crosse Promise. There, you'll also find a link to this program and other recent editions of Newsmakers. And if you'd like to share a comment or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows and photos, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. The La Crosse Promise kicked off as a way to help more area high school students move on from high school to college or technical school. While that effort has been underway for a few years, the second phase of the La Crosse Promise is beginning to take shape. Initiative organizers hope to eventually offer scholarships to families who can pledge to live in certain neighborhoods in La Crosse. Here today to talk more about this is Gerilyn Dinsmore. She's the La Crosse Promise Executive Director. Brian Fukuda, he's the La Crosse County Community Development Specialist. And Haley Moe, she's a Future Center Advisor. So who wants to break down sort of the nuts and bolts of the place-based scholarship program? Gerilyn, do you want to take a stab at it? Because it's ambitious, probably, to say the least.
Well, and I'll start out just briefly explaining what it is, and maybe Brian can chip in on why we're doing this.
Why and how, yeah.
So overall, what we're trying to do is raise the average home value in La Crosse, and Brian will explain why that's a really big, serious issue for La Crosse right now. So what we want to do, we've designated two neighborhoods to begin with, the Paul Polk Hamilton and the Washburn neighborhoods, so roughly the area in between the two hospitals, the River and West Avenue.
Close to downtown.
The city's already determined that these are neighborhoods a little bit at risk or in need of attention. If you were to build a brand new home or significantly remodel a home in those neighborhoods, your family would receive up to $50,000 in scholarships for their children when they were old enough to go to college. They would be scholarships that would be good at any two-year or four-year Wisconsin public or private accredited university. So if you had one child, you would get up to $25,000 or $50,000 or more that you could divide up among your children as you saw fit.
So if you had two or more.
Right.
Okay.
You wouldn't do this, your child would have to be an eighth grader younger because you have to live in the home for 5 years before you're able to get the scholarship. So it'd be great to, if you had a junior to just build a new house and have college paid for, but it doesn't work that way. Our goal is to have increase the enrollment in the school district of La Crosse and to just provide an influx of stable families that are living in these neighborhoods.
And Brian, you once again sort of helped sort of spearhead this idea. Why look at place-based scholarships? How does that really help out the lacrosse economy?
Well, I think there's a lot of ways that it helps out the lacrosse economy. I think, you know, to start, I mean, these are great neighborhoods. These are really great neighborhoods. I mean, they're close to services. They've got great parks. They've got, you know, amazing streets and tree lined sidewalks and all of these sorts of things. They're close to downtown. They're close to major employers. They're great neighborhoods. We have a housing stock problem, is that the houses that are in these neighborhoods are very low value.
And a lot of them are old.
And yeah, because they're old, because they need some TLC. They need some people that are willing to invest in remaking some of these neighborhoods, and not really anything other than just the housing stock. It ends up becoming kind of a drag on the economy because we have such low valued housing stock. So a lot of people are very familiar with the tax rates of the city of La Crosse. And part of the reason that the tax rates in the city of La Crosse are so high is that we don't have enough value per capita, because we don't have, and a lot of that really starts with the housing stock. And so that's what this program is trying to do. And what better way to incentivize people to come and invest in some of these great neighborhoods than to offer them education, to offer them the promise of post-secondary education for their children. Because really, when you look at the people that you want to bring into a neighborhood, you know, these are people that are, that care about education, and they care about their kids, and they care about their community. And so this just is a really good match, I think, for our community.
So as Geralyn said, there's two parts to this. There's the Build Scholarship, the La Crosse Promise Build Scholarship, and the La Crosse Promise Renovate Scholarship. So if a family wanted to build a house in a vacant lot in Washburn or Powell Pogue Hamilton, it would have to be, the value would have to be about $150,000 for the home. But are there many vacant lots in these neighborhoods? I mean, I know that we hear about certain houses potentially coming down, but where's the potential for that currently?
Right. There aren't a lot of vacant lots in these neighborhoods. There are some. And there is opportunity. And so I think what the city and hopefully the county's focus will be on is creating buildable lots within these neighborhoods, using the funding sources that we have available with community development block grants and, you know, potentially TIF revenues and things like that, to be able to purchase some of the most dilapidated housing in the neighborhoods, clear those lots and get them ready for families to come in and build houses.
And Geralyn, did you want to add?
No, you pretty much summed it up.
So, well, we can talk about the renovation program Renovate Scholarship next. So this would be if there's already a home within the neighborhood, and if the family pledges to add $150,000 in renovations?
When they're done with their renovation, the home should be valued at least $150,000. Okay. We created this for a couple of different reasons. One, there are, sometimes we'll hear people say, well, let's just tear down an entire block. If you look around those neighborhoods, every block has several really nice homes that are definitely worth fixing up and adding on to. And the homes that are, say, in the $80,000, $90,000 range, they have a lot of potential to, whether you added on or just a lot of historic renovations that you could do. And so how this program works is you have to put a minimum of $50,000 into the home so that when you're finished, the home is worth $150,000 or more. So chances are there aren't a lot of the really low-value homes, that this just wouldn't be a sensible investment. You'd be better off just building new. But there are many homes that would fit that bill. And what's nice is that as the city attempts to purchase some of the more dilapidated housing and tear it down, make it available for families or anyone to purchase for that matter, there will be an ebb and flow as to when these lots and homes will be available for purchase. So it's nice to have the renovation program as well going on simultaneously for people that are interested in just improving an existing home. I really want to emphasize that the program hasn't begun yet.
Sure.
That we're in the process of raising money
and
we're very close.
The scholarship programs.
Yeah, and we're hoping that this summer we'll be able to announce the program beginning.
Do you know how many families are you, do you have like a goal for how many families you can work with at first?
Our very first phase is to incentivize 30 families over a five-year period of time. Within a few years, we would like it to be 60, and that comes to a goal of roughly one house on every block that's worth $150,000 or more. Now, they don't literally have to be on every block, but just a number we're shooting for so that a certain percentage of the neighborhood raises up to that level that's more comparable to the county home median value, which is $153,000.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about the La Crosse Promise. My guests are Gerilyn Dinsmore. She's the La Crosse Promise Executive Director. Brian Fukuda is the La Crosse County Community Development Specialist. And Haley Moe is a Future Center Advisor. So one of the ideas behind this is bringing more younger families into Washburn and Paula Poke Hamilton, but also I mean, especially with the renovation side of it, I'm sure that's one way to work with families who maybe already are raising families within these neighborhoods.
That's correct, yeah. And then the stability that comes with that commitment that you have to stay here 5 years if you're part of this program. If you need to sell your home because you outgrew it or something, if you did this when your children were very young, you can sell the home after 5 years and then but you do need to remain in the city limits of La Crosse until your child graduates from high school.
What about people who may be saying, I don't have the money to invest into my home or build a new home, but I want to get involved in this project somehow? Is that a potential down the line? Or, you know, is it within the future centers is
right.
Where their participation
is? We keep holding that long-term goal of eventually having enough money that every single child in the city of La Crosse gets a scholarship. That's how Kalamazoo is, and that's how Pittsburgh is. It would also cost us, what, about $30 million in fundraising to make that happen?
At least.
Annually? For startup.
We think we could get to an endowment for, It'd be a hefty endowment to be able to make that happen. But I think, you know, that's still a goal that we have. That's what mm-hmm. other communities have been able to achieve. And, you know, we still maintain that why not La Crosse? But I think this is really part of our strategy is to really, you know, dive into what really are the challenges to our community specifically. You know, Kalamazoo had much greater issues that they were trying to combat with the promise than we do. And so I think what we're trying to get to is this is a strategy that's really going to turn the tide for these neighborhoods, that's really going to bring them up, hopefully to a point that you don't need the incentive to invest in these neighborhoods anymore. And, you know, some would argue that we're already there, that you don't really need an incentive, but we're also seeing in the market that there really isn't enough investment in these neighborhoods at this point in time. So this level of incentive, I think, will help make that happen. And if we can get to our goals, then we get to a point that, you know, it's a good investment without the scholarships to you know, do this, to build new houses and renovate older houses in these neighborhoods. Because, as I said before, these are great neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. There's also a great, we recognize that our solution is part of a multifaceted solution for turning neighborhoods around and improving them, and our community policing efforts, and certainly Habitat for Humanity and Cooley Cap, and then the city's own housing program has done a great deal already of, in particular, tearing down existing homes and building brand new homes. If you drive around Tyler Street or
Look at
the
like
area
16th
around
and Market, those two homes that went up
right. And those are income qualified homes. So mm-hmm. those are opportunities for families that have low to moderate income to be able to purchase a new house. The city has opportunities to offer second mortgages to make those homes more affordable. So our piece of the puzzle is to create an incentive for those middle income or non-income qualified homes to go in as well. So the goal is to have a mixed income neighborhood, and definitely everyone wants to live in above standard housing, regardless of their background or economic situation.
You know, I've heard some people say, well, what if this gentrifies the neighborhood? What if, you know, people who can't afford to live in many other areas of La Crosse are sort of forced out of the neighborhood? Is that something that the group is looking at?
We really wouldn't be forcing anyone out of the neighborhood. One important thing for people to remember is when the city purchases these homes, they're always vacant homes. They're not. Part of the reason is they would have to pay to relocate a family if there was a prime rental that we've always wanted to, you know, see replaced by something nicer. They'd have to relocate them, and rightly so, relocate the family and pay the moving costs, and it's quite expensive. So generally, when these homes come up for sale, it's an elderly person that lived there and passed away, and the children are trying to figure out what to do with the estate and very welcome the opportunity of selling it.
Brian?
Right. Yeah, I think we certainly want to be careful not to gentrify a neighborhood, not to completely turn it, but our goal is really to create a good, diverse neighborhood that offers, you know, all sorts of housing opportunity. And, you know, I think I would argue that, you know, a certain level, if you want to call it gentrification, is necessary, because we're also not doing anybody any favors by allowing the concentrations of poverty that exist there now. And so by strategically kind of working to incentivize other families to move into that neighborhood and mix it up a little bit, I think benefits everyone in the long term.
What about rental conversion? Because this is something we've heard a lot from the city and the county. You know, I think that 50-50 ratio still exists, 50% rentals and 50% home ownership within La Crosse. Is part of this, you know, hoping to convert more rentals into homeowner properties in the program?
Yeah, that could certainly be a part of it. You know, it's not really a main goal. I mean, I think as you see generational changes that are happening right now, rental is also becoming more popular. And you know, so you have the millennial generation that really prefers to rent for various reasons. You have, you know, maybe the boomer generation that's maybe starting to prefer to rent because they might be wintering someplace else or something like that. So I think, you know, our goal is more about quality housing. So if it's quality rental or quality owner occupancy, that's what we're after. Now, the La Crosse Promise is specifically for that owner occupancy side of things. But, you know, I think we'll see, you know, hopefully we'll see some, you know, some of that lower tier rental property that starts to convert into some nice owner occupied housing.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about the La Crosse Promise. My guests are Brian Fukuda. He's the La Crosse County Community Development Specialist. Geraldine Dinsmore, La Crosse Promise Executive Director. And Haley Moe is a Future Center Advisor. I'm wondering, with over time, you know, if there's even just a handful of houses within these two neighborhoods that are renovated or built, what does that mean for funding for La Crosse public schools? Because, you know, property taxes go to fund our schools. Geraldine or Brian?
It helps in more than one way. Of course, the property taxes and then the enrollment, the way the state revenue is figured out for various school districts. It's of great benefit to the school district of La Crosse to see that enrollment increase. And again, that's why we stand firm with our mission of our solution is families, is children, is increased enrollment. That's the type of demographic that we're working to attract.
Brian?
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, the part of the goal is to really help our school districts, all of our school districts, be more efficient with their operations. And so previously, when we looked at the challenging trends facing La Crosse County when all of this work first started 8 or so years ago, we saw a trend where we were spending huge amounts of money to the tune of $120 million in school referendums over a 15-year period to essentially shuffle students around from district to district. We had an overall enrollment increase of less than 6% over that period, and we spent $120 million as a community to make that happen. And that's not efficient. That's horribly inefficient. And so if we're able to make the La Crosse School District more efficient by keeping more families with children here, keeping the enrollment levels pretty consistent and stable, and not having families with children moving out, then that school district is more efficient. On the flip side, the suburban school districts will be more efficient as well because they're not worrying about their next referendum every couple of years because they've got to build a new school to, you know, to deal with their enrollment increases. So this is really about efficiencies and helping all of the school districts all across the region.
Haley, I'm curious, when you're working with the high school students, is the place-based scholarship program, is that anything you're talking with them about? I mean, I know they're concentrating on going to college or tech school, but are they thinking about home ownership at this point?
Not really. I wouldn't think so. A lot of them are really worrying about the debt that they're going to incur and really figuring out how they're going to fill that gap between what they're being offered in financial aid and what they can come with out of pocket.
Sure. But Geraldine, do you think at some point, you know, is this something that can be introduced, this incentive, especially if the money needed for this program, you know, gets to be big enough?
Definitely. Yeah, anything to make college more affordable is going to be great. I just remembered Haley as a mother of a little toddler. It was interesting when you were searching for another house, you had an interesting experience in terms of really wanting very much to be living close to the city center. And did you care to share?
Yeah, I mean, it was just a year ago. We sold our house in the city of La Crosse. We loved that little house, but we were just looking for something a little bit bigger. And at first, we were open to looking in West Salem, Holman, Onalaska. We actually put an offer on a house in Onalaska, and it didn't work out. And then it kind of all boiled back down to we would really like to be in the city of La Crosse because I can walk to work, and I could walk to the grocery store, and I can walk to the library, and we can walk downtown. I mean, we are so close to everything. And, I mean, like back in January, my car was in the shop, and I walked to work for 2 days. It was nice enough. So it's just been so nice to be able to live close where I hear other people that I work with complain about it takes 25 minutes to get to the south side of La Crosse, you know, from such and such area. And it's like, well, it takes me 20 minutes to walk to work, but I'm right here, you know, mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that.
So is the La Crosse Promise, like the place-based scholarship, is that something that down the line you'd be interested in participating in?
Possibly. I mean, it's definitely something that our family would be open to looking into. We love the house that we just bought, but, you know, our child is just a little baby right now, so mm-hmm. We've got plenty of time. If this is something that would really fall into place, we would look into it.
So, Brian, as you look forward, you know, I know Geraldine said the big goal is to be able to offer scholarships to everyone, every student in La Crosse, but as you look forward at this program, I mean, what sort of difference could this have on the overall community, and how big could this get?
Sure. I think it's all in the hands of the community and how big they want it to get. And, you know, we're going to certainly push on it and continue to work to take it as far as the community will support it. But I think it certainly has a lot of potential, both the potential that we're already seeing of just changing the lives of individual students through the Future Centers, but then moving to changing the makeup of individual neighborhoods that maybe need a little bit of a boost with this next phase of the promise. And then we certainly hope that at some point we're going to be able to offer at least some level of scholarship to every student that lives here, because I think that can really still have tremendous impact on our community, on our reputation as a community, on our ability to recruit talent, to recruit businesses.
I was going to say, you've even said that this could bring businesses to the community.
Sure. And you know, they've seen that in other promise communities because, you know, businesses want to locate in communities that are dedicated to providing, you know, good talent, good educated workforce that's going to be able to help those businesses be successful. And so, you know, that's certainly in the works. That's something that's still in our plans, and we're hoping to continue to work at it. But I think, you know, this has such huge economic impacts just from, you know, kind of what we were just talking about, where maybe people that are visiting the Future Centers right now don't necessarily have that in their head. But if we can help those students to find scholarship opportunities or give them scholarship opportunities, then they're graduating with less debt. And a huge percentage of our students are going to school right here in our community at one of our three institutions of higher education. So if we're putting out students that have less debt, then those students are in a better position to be able to buy a house. And if they have some level of you know, affection and maybe some feeling about this community, this is where they want to raise their kids and start their family, then it starts to perpetuate that cycle of urban incline. So,
and Geralyn Dinsmore, we're running short on time, but I'm wondering if you want to just sum up your hopes and dreams and vision for the future with this.
Well, it always amazes me. I've just been with the organization for 18 months, but to work with this really talented board of directors that's representing government and city, county, business, education, and combined with that, the idea that we are the very first people in the United States to try anything like this, that's tying a college scholarship to buying or a building or renovating a home in a at-risk neighborhood. And it's just been really neat to see all the creativity come together. No one person has all the answers to how to make it work, but
it evolves over time.
Tireless, efforts of so many volunteers working out the details, and we're very anxious to get it started. Hope we can very soon.
Geralyn Dinsmore is the La Crosse Promise Executive Director, Brian Fukuda is the La Crosse County Community Development Specialist, and Haley Moe is a Future Center Advisor. Today we are talking about the La Crosse Promise. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Mian Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. Visit WPR.org/newsmakers to find a link to the La Crosse Promise. There, you can also listen to today's program or find other recent editions of Newsmakers.